As I mentioned, Saul fell victim to peer pressure, and it has always been a problem, and there are plenty of examples in the Bible of people who got caught up in that. For sake of time, I'm not going to read that passage over in Proverbs there, but just let you know that that is the father trying to appeal to his son not to get caught up in what other people are doing. That if sinners, for example, in verse 10, entice you, do not consent. They're going to put all kinds of pressure upon him. But he's trying to get him to realize you don't want to do that. Don't cast your lot with others who are doing something wrong. And of course, Saul gave in, according to him anyway. We don't really ever hear from the people. Gave in to the desires of the people. It's a threat to all of us. If you're a young person here this morning, and you are living under the illusion that, boy, once I get old, I won't have to worry about peer pressure. Well, I want to shatter that illusion. There is peer pressure no matter what stage of life that you are in. It changes, but there's still some pressure that may be felt from others to try to coerce you into doing something you shouldn't do. We're not ever immune from it. There's only one person that faced no peer pressure. I'll let you think about maybe who that was. There's no excuse for sinning, regardless. Regardless. We cannot ever say, well, I couldn't help it. Because God is faithful, not allow us to be tempted beyond what we're able. Such temptation is common to man, but will with temptation make a way of escape. So, there isn't any excuse. Only one person faced no peer pressure to do wrong from some other human being. A lot of pressures. Sometimes the pressure is trying to get you to act in unity with other people. Come on, we're all going. We're all going to go get drunk. You might as well go along with us. Trying to appeal on the basis of some kind of unity. Or on the basis of identity. You don't want to be known as some kind of goody-two-shoes, do you? Don't you want to be known as a popular person? That's what it has to do with identity. Loyalty. Look what we've done for you. We went along with what you wanted us to do. Now you go along with what we want. You need to be loyal. Or the peer pressure may come as a result of some kind of reward that supposedly is going to be there. Back there in Proverbs 1, where it talks about casting your lot with us. They're going to lie in wait. They're going to ambush somebody. To take what they have. There would be some kind of reward incentive involved in that. What I want to accomplish in here is, very briefly, we want to see what peer pressure is all about, to see what God has done to try to help us as we look at peer pressure, see it at work with different kinds of results. Well, has God done anything to help us with this problem? And we're going to look at Rehoboam. Now, Rehoboam is the son of Solomon, who was the third king of Israel. Upon the death of his father, Solomon was going to come to the throne. But we have to say, in his favor, that he recognized that he needed some good advice. He didn't think that he knew everything, didn't have that attitude. And so he's looking to some others for advice. He's got some tough decisions that he has to make. And so he decides he will consult two different groups of people. He consulted, first of all, with the men who were the age of Solomon. King Rehoboam consulted with the elders who had served his father Solomon while he was still alive, saying, "How do you counsel me to answer this people? How should I deal with this? If you'll be a servant to the people, will serve them, grant them their petition, and speak good words to them, then they will be your servants forever." In essence, they were saying, just treat them right. Don't try to take advantage of them. Be good to the people, and they'll serve you. It'll work out for everybody. Well, then he consulted with his own peer group. He forsook the council of the elders, which they had given him, and consulted with the young men who grew up with him and served him. "What counsel do you give that we may answer this people who have spoken to me, saying, 'Lighten the yoke which your father put on us'?" The people simply wanted some relief. The older men said, "Give it to them. Be good to them. They'll work for you." The young men said quite the contrary. "Thus you shall say to this people who spoke to you, saying, 'Your father made our yoke heavy, now make it lighter for us.' But you shall speak to them, 'My little finger is thicker than my father's loins.'" In other words, "I'm going to be harder on you than my father was. "Whereas my father loaded you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, I will discipline you with scorpions." He's weighing two groups of advice. Unfortunately, he made the wrong choice, and the kingdom was divided. And that began what is called the divided kingdom period in the history of Israel. Other people have done like him. Solomon. In chapter 11 of 1 Kings, we find out about Solomon. What did Solomon do? He loved all these foreign women. All these nations that God had said in verse 2, don't associate with them. They're going to turn your heart away after their gods. Solomon held fast to these in love. They turned his heart away from God. He yielded to the pressure that was there. Peter is told by Jesus, "You're going to deny me three times." He says, "No, I'll never do that." But he did. Matthew 26. Yeah, denied him three times. And got stronger in his denial each time. He didn't want to be associated with Jesus at that point in time. Peer pressure. That's why we're warned, 1 Corinthians 15:33, to beware of our companions. Evil communication corrupt good morals. David. Now, David is a contrast to Rehoboam. David didn't yield to pressure when he is advised to kill Saul. He's being advised, "Well, you got a golden opportunity here, David. You need to take it." David's basic position was, he's the Lord's anointed. It's not my job to remove him. When God gets ready to remove him from office, God will do that. "Behold, this is the day of which the Lord said to you, 'Behold, I'm about to give your enemy into your hand. You shall do to him as it seems good to you.'" David arose and cut off the edge of Saul's robe secretly. That even bothered his conscience, next verse says. He didn't kill him, but it was a way of letting Saul know that he could have. And it even bothered him that he did that. Now, it wasn't bothering him, his friends. He said to his men, "Far be it from me because of the Lord that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him since he is the Lord's anointed." That was David's reasoning for not taking Saul's life, though he had the opportunity. On another occasion, he had a friend that offered to do it for him. "Well, David, if you don't want to do this," Abishai said, "today God has delivered your enemy into your hand. Now, therefore, please let me strike him with the spear to the ground with one stroke, and I will not strike him a second time." "David, if you don't want to do this, I'll do it for you." Well, that would have been, if he would have said, "Yes, go ahead," then he might as well do it himself. No, he wasn't going to have any part of that either. But again, on that occasion, he did something to let Saul know that he could have taken his life, but he didn't. There have been others that have resisted peer pressure, and that's what David was under. His peer group was saying, "This is a golden opportunity, David. You passed up one chance, now you've got another chance." In chapter 26, he said, "I'm not taking it." Like Daniel. Why didn't Daniel give in to peer pressure? Because he made a determination in Daniel chapter 1 and verse 8. That he says, "I am not going to defile myself." That's why later on he was willing to be thrown into the lion's den. Because he was going to remain faithful to God. He wasn't going to give in. The three Hebrews, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, in the third chapter of Daniel, again, there would have been pressure upon them to quit worshiping God. "Nope, we're going to keep worshiping God. I'll throw you in a furnace. Go ahead. We're not going to bow down to your image, Nebuchadnezzar. We're not going to do it. Should our God decide not to deliver us, that's fine with us too." They accepted the possibility that they might have to die. But what they were not going to do was give in to the pressure of others who perhaps gave in and try to deny God. They were not going to do that. In that regard, they were like David. Well, we have to have the strength to say no to peer pressure. Like David did. Like Daniel did. Like the three Hebrews did. And like Joseph. Wow, you talk about somebody under pressure. But Joseph was not about to give in to the pressure that was definitely coming down upon him. He was going to be in big trouble. She was not going to give up. Potiphar's wife, that is. But he was not going to give in either. He was not going to yield. You can almost hear people trying to rationalize that in a lot of cases. "Well, who's going to know? There's nobody in the house but me and you. You don't tell anybody, I won't tell anybody. We're two consenting adults, right?" No, Joseph says, I'm not going to do that. Not going to do that. Well, why not, Joseph? Well, two reasons, really. One, he didn't want to betray his master. Verse 8, "He refused and said to his master's wife, 'Behold, with me here my master did not concern himself with anything in the house. He's put all things that he owns in my charge.'" So he said, "I'm not going to do it." And he said in verse 8, 9, "How then can I do this great evil and sin against God?" So it would have been a sin against his master, but more importantly, against God. He respected his master, which grew out of his respect for God. Not going to do it. Can't do it. Won't do it. He resisted peer pressure. I would suggest that he allowed his earlier training to guide him. That he had the background necessary to know what to do in a given situation. And that's what we're supposed to provide for our children. Provide them with the tools they need to make the good choices. That's what Ephesians 6:4 is all about. "Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. Bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. train them to make good decisions, like Daniel, like the three Hebrews, like Joseph, like David did on that occasion. What has God done to help us? Well, two things. He gave us a family. Our family is the single greatest influence on us. I really believe that. Yes, we begin to grow up, we go to school, we come under pressure there of our friends, other students, but the single greatest influence in our life will be our family. Why is it that people yield to peer pressure anyway? Well, we talked about some of those reasons. God has given us the family to protect us from the things that would tempt us to join in and do something wrong. We've got unity, loyalty, and all those things we talked about at the beginning that motivate people to give in and do the wrong thing. We got that in the family. We hopefully do. Unity, loyalty, protection. That's what God's given us the family for. Remember, people appeal, peer pressure, they yield because of things that are missing. Well, the family is supposed to be there to help supply those things for us. We don't have to go out here and do something wrong with somebody in order to feel like we belong, because we've got a family. Now, if there is problems, of course, in the family, then that's going to break down. Genesis 37 is talking about how that Jacob showed favoritism to Joseph, which created a breakdown in that family unit, didn't it? What did that do to his brothers? Well, by showing favoritism to Joseph, they came to despise him, to the point where they sold him into slavery. So parents, we got to watch this kind of thing. We got to make sure that in our families, we don't show that kind of favoritism. Because obviously the one that's not getting that favor, not going to take that too kindly. And that was a terrible thing that they did. But Jacob contributed to that by his favoritism toward Joseph. Sometimes fathers are gone too much, work too much. Work becomes a hindrance. And once again, that exposes our children then to find that acceptance and everything somewhere else. If they don't get it at home, they're going to get it somewhere. That's where their peer group comes in, fills up a void that may be missing in the family. Fathers are very, very important. Well, mothers are too. But they've proven by all kinds of studies that when children grow up in a home without a father, they're much more likely to have trouble at school, get into trouble with the law, and all kinds of terrible things. God gave us the family as a hedge against some of these problems. In fact, our family is the main line of defense against yielding to this peer pressure out there in order to find acceptance, in order to prove our loyalty to someone. Do that in the family. But he not only gave us family, he gave us a church, a spiritual family. No, not the social gospel. People think that if we just build a family life center and have a bunch of sports activities and meals and all that kind of stuff, that's really going to do what God intended to do by the church. No, it's not. Not why God established the church. He established the church to be our family, our spiritual family, made up of all kinds of individuals with varying skills and degrees of faith, but all striving to someday go to heaven. It's our family. It should be important to us. It may end up being more important to us than our physical family, which may have broken down for one reason or another. Matthew 12:37. That's not the right verse. Skip over that one. Chapter 19, verse 29. Everyone who has left houses or brothers or sisters or father or mother or children or farm for my name's sake shall receive many times as much and inherit eternal life. See that? You may not have your physical family to support you and to keep you on the right track, but if you're a Christian, you got a spiritual family, they are there for you. They will help you. The unity that sometimes is the appeal, again, to do things wrong with a certain group of people, we got that in the church we're supposed to have. As Jesus was praying for his disciples, he prayed not only for them, but he prayed for those that would become children through their teaching, and of course that's talking about us. Sanctify them through that truth, thy word is truth. He prayed furthermore in verse 21 that they all may be one, even as thou, Father, are in me and I in thee, that they also may be one in us, that the world may believe that thou hast sent me. All those things that peer pressure brings upon us, to be satisfied in a wrongful way can be satisfied in the right way because God gave us a church. Remember another reason? For identity, people yield to peer pressure for identity. You've got an identity as a child of God. You belong to him. You're special. Jesus died for you. And it doesn't matter, as Paul talked to the Galatians there, about male, female, slave, free. It doesn't matter. Those distinctions don't matter in the church. They mattered in society, but they're not supposed to matter in the church. We have a sense of fellowship and brotherhood in the church, which again can help stave off this pressure that may come from our peers to do the wrong thing. We have that in the church. Philippians chapter 2. If there be any encouragement in Christ, if there's any consolation of love, any fellowship of the Spirit, any affection and compassion, make my joy complete by being of the same mind, maintaining the same love, united in spirit, intent on one purpose. In the church, fellowship, a sense of brotherhood. God did that for us to help us to fight off the peer pressure that comes upon us from the world. It's life-threatening. Go back again and you can read things in the book of Proverbs that talk about that. The devastating effects that yielding to peer pressure. Well, we know what it did to Rehoboam. It caused the kingdom of God to be divided into the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. Parents are there to help. That's family. Turn to your parents when you're being tempted to do something wrong. Talk to them about it. Get their advice. They've lived a few years. They know more than you do. And our reward, of course, ultimately, is great. Paul talked about the crown of life that awaited him. If you're here this morning, have one more opportunity now as we sing this song for your encouragement.